And now it's time for the Wildside News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Summer is here, and just about the time it gets going, the days start getting shorter, which is the best incentive yet to get out and enjoy the good times. Meanwhile, in the nation's capital, the Senate is trying to put together their side of a national energy bill. We find out how they're doing and visit Petrified Forest National Park on your Voice of the Earth when we return here on the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News, and now, Sydney Wildsmith.
What a time to be debating a supposed comprehensive energy bill in the Senate, a few days after the longest day of sunlight of the year has passed. Because when you look at this new emerging plan being forged in the nation's capital, it's pretty obvious this is Senator Domenici's dream piece. It is such an old energy giveaway, it's almost embarrassing. We're dedicating this Wildside News show to the National Energy Bill, which will include a giant new provision to inventory all U.S. continental waters for possible energy development, despite the moratorium on such and the objections by citizens and governors in coastal states. The inventory uses high-energy sonic explosions, which verge on immoral acts to life of our oceans. In segment 3, we take a break and visit a terrific national park where the ancient life that didn't turn into coal and oil managed to survive intact as solid rock. It's our Petrified Forest National Park in Arizona. It's another great show that gives you the information you need when you want it from anywhere in the world on your Voice of the Earth, the Wildside News. So let's take a look at today's news and then go take a look at the nation's developing energy bill. So first, the news. The Senate continues debate on its energy bill, which is scheduled to make available $14 billion to promote more domestic oil, natural gas, and gasoline production, make the U.S. electric grid more reliable, and build more nuclear power plants. As well, alternative energy or clean energy sources are being provided with incentives for mixing their contribution to the energy equation. As the debate continues, President Bush visited the site Wednesday of a proposed future Calvert Cliffs nuclear power plant south of Washington, D.C., as part of an effort to rejuvenate the nuclear power industry that has laid dormant for over 20 years. The president championed the safety and global warming sensitivity of the nuclear industry. Nuclear power accounts for 20% of all U.S. electric power generation. Citing improved training and technological advances, the president offered, "Nuclear power plants are far safer than ever before, generating electricity and protecting the environment at the same time." This national energy bill will be covered in more detail following the news. The Bush administration is using the science of numbers to alter various standards enacted by various regulatory agencies, which mandated repopulation strategies when fish species were considered overfished. Whereas in the past, overfished species were required to be rebuilt within 10 years, the new proposals create flexible time frames that will extend the number of years that impacted fish can remain at risk. The National Environmental Trust said that if approved, the rule would open the nation's oceans to overfishing with impunity and strip the ability to protect the nation's fish populations and the ocean ecosystems of which they are a part. Meanwhile, in South Korea, the International Whaling Commission Wednesday urged Japan to stop using whale research as a cover for what in reality is commercial fishing. Japan, under the auspices of data collection, harvests 450 minke whales and also kills fin and humpback whales, two species considered threatened by conservationists, claiming their take is a scientific taking for collecting data on the whale's eating habits. Through this program, which is not regulated by the IWC, Japan intends to extend its research to double its previous levels. In most cases, the meat from the research animals ends up in gourmet food shops in Japan and in specialty restaurants. Japan has threatened to pull out of the IWC, as they claim the scientific underpinnings are real and the rancor around the program overblown. Meanwhile, in California, following the declaration that West Coast groundfish fishery was an economic disaster due to a combination of overfishing and poor ocean conditions, the Pacific Fishery Management Council, which regulates West Coast fishing, supported a ban on bottom trawling in depths beyond 4,200 feet and a variety of shallower areas, extending to all western states' coastal waters from 3 miles to 200 miles offshore. "It's a huge victory for conservation," said Jim Ayers, Pacific Region Director for Oceana. "It maintains economic opportunity for today's commercial fishermen, but more importantly, it ensures economic opportunity for future generations." And now a note on other fishing issues. With Father's Day behind us, researchers have released a report on the worst fish dads. According to behavioral scientists, fish just don't really make good dads. However, the Japanese cardinal fish has set a new record low in the annals of parenting. The father of the brood starts out being an amazingly dedicated dad who raises his young in his mouth until they are able to get along on their own. That is, until he meets a female that he feels is more deserving of his charms than the mother of his children. It's then that he eats his children and then rushes off to fan the flames of love with his new romance. And that's today's news. And so now, our story in progress. About a year ago, I remember doing a story in which I talked about rumors of a barrel of oil rising from the then current $30 per barrel to $50 a barrel, and even talk of $70 a barrel. Well, welcome to the new world. This week, oil touched $60 per barrel. Yesterday, it was stuck around $59, and there's no reason for that price to get any lower in the near future. As a matter of fact, with Norwegian oil workers threatening to strike and other unsettling news and uncertainties, we can now announce that experts are casually slipping predictions of $100 per barrel oil as a fairly reasonable futures price. I have no choice but to warn us all. When that happens, significant changes in our social structure will be sudden and dramatic. When such oil prices occur, and with every creeping $10 rise in the price of oil, prices on all goods and services will have to rise as well. Another doubling in the cost of oil will see prices at the pump reaching $4 to $5 a gallon. A typical SUV with a 20-gallon tank will require close to $100 to fill the tank, which may buy conservatively 3 days of transportation. For people on minimum wage, it will get to the point that they are working for $1.50 an hour after paying for gas to get to and from work, which would leave about $200 per month to live on. That's for food, housing, fun, and everything else. And through all this, I watch our grand pooba of economic forecasting, Alan Greenspan, go on and on with his deadpan drolling, as members of Congress smile intelligently and repeat academic questions as if in Economics 5004. Shouldn't someone sound an alarm? Energy these days. The effects of this uncertain necessity go unchecked. So at a time like this, as the Senate debates and crafts our energy bill, our national energy bill, are they addressing these critical needs of this nation? Let's take a look. First, crafting a national energy bill has been attempted before. In 2003, the effort stalled because there was significant disagreement over the gasoline additive NTBE. So this year, although the House has passed an energy bill. The Senate is now amending its version with many new amendments that the House may not agree to. If the two bodies cannot come to agreement, there will be no energy bill. The first logical question most people would ask is, will this help us reduce the price of gas and home heating oil? The answer is no. There is absolutely nothing in this bill that addresses the immediate looming crisis. Okay, then one might logically ask, does this bill lead to a reasonably efficient answer to our reliance on foreign energy sources in the future? Again, the answer is no. As a matter of fact, it does plenty to create more divisions within our people over energy production by providing massive incentives to further expansion of oil, natural gas, and coal within the U.S. while providing minimal support for the development of a real energy sustainable future. And to further complicate the picture, there is a lot of bobbing and weaving to clear the way for the new emerging good guy for our energy future, nuclear power. That's right, radiation is a clean tech option because it is friendly to CO2 emissions. It's really just that simple. And the energy bill is bringing billions of dollars to the coal industry because it has new technologies that promise fewer sulfur emissions. Of course, little is said about the requirements to tear up massive landscapes, mostly on public lands, to get to this coal and uranium ore. That, of course, is a minor detail. I really don't have time to listen to all of the day's testimony ongoing in the Senate. The debate runs strongly along partisan lines, even though the two senators from New Mexico are jointly sponsoring this bill, Pete Domenici, a Republican, and Jeff Bingaman, a Democrat. This is supposed to give the appearance that this is a good-faith, bipartisan attempt at compromise. But the debate is as partisan as ever. I tune in on occasion to hear some new amendment being proposed, and the rhetoric is as it has always been. Republicans promote extractive industries like coal, oil, gas, and uranium, while the Democrats fight for wind, solar, geothermal oceans, fuel cells, and the like. But with the balance of power being what it is in the Senate, it's pretty obvious which side wins almost every issue. I get embarrassed listening to the Republican side still quoting experts and amazingly still quoting the distorted rewriting of science to stall any admission by the Senate that global warming is in fact a threat or even a real consideration. The highly touted McCain-Lieberman amendment that would have placed mandated controls on CO2 emissions and brought us in line with other developed nations was rejected and replaced with the Hagel amendment, which encourages voluntary compliance to lessen global warming. I guess that is the environmental victory we are all now supposed to rejoice about. At least there is acknowledgement that global warming can be mentioned in legislation bearing bipartisan support. Oh, yippee. At times, it becomes a carnival of mirrors. Wednesday afternoon, I tuned in to find a cadre of three Republican senators discussing the Alexander Warner Amendment that proposed placing restrictions on federal funding for any wind power projects that were within 20 miles of the boundary of any highly scenic areas, which included all UN heritage sites, all national parks, all national lakeshores, all national seashores, all national wildlife refuges, and the list went on. Here was Lamar Alexander making the case that our nation's scenic areas are so precious that a federal law had to be put in place to prohibit any wind power projects from receiving federal subsidies if they were within 20 miles of any of these areas. Wow. This by the same people who fight tooth and nail to site massive oil production facilities within the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and who only recently ridiculed those who appealed for protection of this majestic treasure? The large-scale, blatant hypocrisy by the extractive powerhouses To propose such an amendment designed to kill the wind industry is appalling. On a very personal note, I simply must say that as someone who lived for 25 years in New Mexico and who has watched the history of both of New Mexico's two senators, it has been obvious that there are very few senators as deeply owned by the extractive energy players than Pete Domenici. And Senator Bingaman, a good scientist, lacks the spit and vinegar required to claw out the support needed to assure our energy future. It is frightening to realize that America's survival has been placed in the pocket of this lifelong servant of special interests, Senator Pete Domenici. As I write this, the vote is being taken on the Alexander Amendment. I believe it speaks directly to the unfettered gall and hypocrisy which is guiding the supposed energy bill. There's much to be said about legislating America's energy future with this bill. At this point, it appears that we have dramatically lost this battle to develop a sustainable energy future, to recreate our dreams, put people back to work, and develop the clean tech future that is critical to our national survival. The supposed bipartisan image which has been crafted is a dangerous appeasement to what should be and could be a real effort by our elected officials to put us on a path to true energy independence. As things go, the Senate bill, although acknowledging the importance of a mix of old and new energy sources, falls so short as to be laughable. Perhaps the best option for us at this point is to hope that this bill follows in the history of previous energy bills, and that it will die for lack of compromise in the House. I urge you all to use your best judgment, do the necessary, and work to give power back to the citizens of this country. When we return, we talk with Lisa Speer of the NRDC, who takes a look at the energy bill's provision, which passed, which, if implemented, will create one of the most appalling attacks on our living oceans, all in a backdoor attempt to expand oil and gas exploration on our continental shelf, as we continue to look at the ongoing Senate energy debate on your Voice of the Earth here on the Wild Side News.